Okay, so I didn't find anything new to talk about in the Eishes Chayil, so I figure I should still learn something. So I want to speak about something relevant for the current event. So there's, I was able to photocopy one sheet that I'll give you shortly, but I think this these two pieces are very apropos for what people are either going through or anticipating going through. And I want to start with a piece from Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, who was the Mashgiach in the Mir Rosh Yeshiva, who passed away in 1979. And he explains a Gemara in Nedarim. When Miriam got Saras and Moshe prayed for her, and he said to Hashem, Al na tehi, they said to Miriam, Al na, about Miriam, Al na tehi kamesh, she shall not be like a dead person. So the rabbis learn in the Gemara Nedarim that there are four people who are considered like a dead person. Who are the four people? An ani, a poor person; a mitzora, a leper; a suma, a blind person; and someone who doesn't have children. So the question is, starting with the Mitzora, why is the Mitzora considered like a dead person? So Reb Chaim says, it can't be because of the physical affliction that they go through, which is also, could be a very painful experience. Because we already know that even no matter what all the sufferings of the world are, it's not considered like death. As it says in Tehillim, Yasor Yisrani Ko, Hashem, you can cause me to suffer, but Vilamovis Lo Nisanani, but don't deliver me into the hand of death. Or as it says in Eicha, Ma Yis Onein Adam Chai, what does a person have to complain about if he is alive? And the commentaries explain that, you know, there's nothing to complain about if a person is alive. You got the jackpot, right? Doesn't matter about suffering. As he proves this from another Gemara, the Gemara said there were three people involved in the final decision of what to do with the Jews in Egypt: Yisro, Eov, and Bilam. And Bilam, who advised to kill all the Jews, he was killed. Eov, who was silent, he was judged with terrible sufferings. So the question is, well, terrible suffering. He was quiet. How come he had such a terrible punishment? Why did he get such a bad punishment? The answer is he got a punishment not as bad as Bilam's. Dying is the worst thing that could happen. Because once you're dead, you can't do any more mitzvahs anymore. So the fact that a person's suffering, that is not enough to consider him to be like a dead person. So there's got to be a common denominator that although a person suffers a lot, that cannot be the reason why the person is considered a dead person. So what is it that these four have in common that consider them like a dead person? So what the Torah says about the Mitzora is that Bodod Yeshev Michutz L'machanecha Moshavo, he has to live alone outside of the camp. And that makes him considered like a dead person. And we will explain why. We'll explain why. That these four people have to have a common denominator. And it's not that they just happen to be in forlorn states that make them like a dead person. But each one has a factor that has a common denominator of all of them. Let's start with the blind person. A blind person, it's interesting, the Gemara says that if you make a person deaf by hitting him, so what's the monetary compensation that he must receive? Is you have to give him the value of his whole being. If he'd be sold as a slave, you have to give full value, even though all he did was take away his hearing, the full value. But we did not say a deaf person is like a dead person. Right? A blind person, if you blind a person, what's your monetary compensation? Is the value of the eyes. not the entire value of the person. Right? But the blind person considered like dead. So this is a very interesting question. If a blind person is considered like dead, but from a halachic point of view, in terms of monetary compensation, we don't treat it that way. We treat it just an injury. Well, if you make the person deaf, they make them pay the full thing. So how do we square that while the deaf person is not considered a dead person? So he explains, Reb Chaim, he says, that a person is a damager. When I damage somebody, we measure the punishment by the damage to the one who got, to the victim. And from the victim's perspective, what is the more important sense to have is the ear. For the victim, from the victim's perspective, the ear is very important. Because Rabbeinu Yonah says regarding that, he says the eye is a very precious body part, but the ear is even more important. Ear is even more important. Because when a person hears good news, we know the Gemara says it makes his whole body feel better. Okay? But seeing things don't make you as good. Hearing good news, it's a Gemara in Gittin, when Vespasian was taking off his boots. He took off one boot, and then they told him that he's the emperor of Rome, and he couldn't take off the other boot. And they asked the rabbi, "What's going on?" He says, "You heard good news, and your whole flesh like expanded." Hearing is a form. The victim's point of view is extremely important. Okay, hearing the effect of what you hear affects the entire body, and therefore, if you damage a person's sense of hearing, you have to pay his full value. But the eye, although it doesn't give you as much pleasure as the ear, but your eyes cause you to sense what's going on with other people more than what your ears. In terms of my interacting with others, as the eye is more important than the ear. For example, it says Moshe went out and he saw the plight of his brothers. And Rashi says he put his eyes and heart to suffer with the Jewish people. You cannot compare in terms of interacting with the rest of the world. You cannot compare the sense of hearing to the sense of sight. You could hear all kinds of news. You could hear that another person is sick. And you go, "Oh, that's terrible." But then when you visit them and see them connected to 55 contraptions in an emergency ward, you feel a lot worse. You have integrated more about the other person because you see what the person's plight is. So although in terms of, for me personally, what's better for me, my own personal pleasure, is the sense of hearing, but my ability to interact with others is the sense of sight. That's much more important. And that's why the blind person is considered a dead person. Because without the sense of sight, he's not able to as well sense the plight of others, which renders him to live himself, by himself. And that's the same idea of the Metzora. That since he has to stay by himself, he has no connection with other people, and therefore he's like a dead person. Okay, and therefore a person without children is also has someone, it does not, the nature of a person is he wants to be nice to other people. He wants to have somebody to shower kindness to. And generally you can't just do it with anybody, but you have children, that's the easiest way to do that. And if you don't have children, I mean, you could maybe get up beyond that, but in a normal reality, person doesn't have that much interactions with a lot of people, doesn't have the ability to help a lot of people, but your children, you clearly, it's built into the system, they need your help. And that's why he explains the story with the two women who came to King Solomon, and they both claimed that this baby was their baby. And the question is, try to understand the lying woman. What was she gaining? This wasn't her kid. What did she benefit? But the desire to help somebody else is so strong, you'd steal somebody else's baby to be able to help them. Okay, therefore, if you don't have children, you're like a dead person. And a poor person certainly can't help other people. And since the poor person can't help other people, he certainly is not in that position. He's like a dead person as well. So therefore, if you look, the common denominator of all these four, and that's why also the mita keneged mita of the person who's the mitzora is that what does he do? He speaks lashon hara about people. He causes people to separate from each other because they're fighting with each other. And that's like killing them because they have less people to interact with. So Hashem punishes him measure for measure that he has to stay home alone and has nobody that he could be involved with and interacting, but primarily to be giving to others. Life is all about having other people in your life and having someone to share your life with. And most importantly, real life is to give to other people. That's what life is. And the mitzora who's in his house has no one to give to. The poor man doesn't have the resources to give to. The blind person can't feel the plight of another person to know how to help that other person. And the person without children is very much limited in that. So that is really the punishment that many of our fellow Jews are suffering now, that they're being quarantined in their home for 2 weeks, that they don't have the ability to interact. It's not just not to interact. That's loneliness. It's not loneliness. It's that there aren't other Jews that they can help. And that sphere of influence is limited. So that's something to think about. And again, it's not my place to tell other people what their tshuva should be. But where I want to take this now is with this piece of the Shem Mishmul, because you're going to say, well, that's very nice, but Baruch Hashem, all of us are not being limited, and we have not yet been quarantined. So let's take a look at this next piece from the Shem Mishmul, which will help us appreciate this point a little bit. So we're going to start on the right-hand side in the middle of the page, the new paragraph, Vihine. It's in the middle of a piece, but this piece can stand on its own. Shem Yishmol brings out Vihine Kvod Kodesh Avi Admor Zatzal. He quotes from his father, the Iglei Tal, the Sukkot Shavu Rebbe. Perish Divrei Hashas, he explains this statement in the Gemara, when Yaakov escorted Yosef from Chevron to go to his brothers. It says, Vayishlecheu me'emek Chevron. He sent them from the valley of Chevron. And we know there's no valley in Chevron. Chevron's a mountainous place. So what does it mean in emek, a valley? So Gemara explains, Be'etza amuka, from the deep advice, shall also tzadik, from that tzadik Avram, hakover b'chevron, who's buried in Chevron. Meaning to say, it's saying the valley, Amek can be valley, Amek can be deep. There was something deep going on. The Torah is hinting there was big, deep plans over here. Which is what? Something about Avram Avinu is what promulgated the entire sale of Yosef. Hainu, Sha'Avram Avinu Olav HaShalom, that's what it stands for. Shenoilid v'nizgadol b'beisur shel Terach. He was born and grew up in the house of Terach. Mokom tenufas avodazor, a place filled with filthy avodazor. Now, something fascinating. He's giving us a little perspective on the feelings of a Baal Tshuva. Keshehirgish dvar ma shel kedusha. When Avram sensed something of holiness in such an unholy place, nisgadla etzla hachuka b'yoser, a yearning was heightened inside of him. Because light is much greater than darkness. When you're wallowing in darkness and then something special, holy, a feeling comes to you, Avram's got this idea. He's saying, you know, there's something more than this silliness. And you get a yearning for that. And anything of Kedusha was something new to him. And very precious. Precious idea that, you know, things can be better. So he really was into this ideology. He said, there's an idea of a God. There's a concept of morality. We live for a higher purpose. It's very exciting. Avram was excited about a better world than what he was in. And that got him to feel a connection to Hashem. And it got him very excited about monotheism. And that was Avram's life. But he was very concerned about his great-great-great-great-grandchildren. He's afraid that his descendants after him, after many days, when they will be raised in a holy atmosphere and they do not know of this ugliness, and they're raised in the silver spoon of spirituality. And this isn't something that's new, because we know something new is precious. So their Yiddishkeit is not going to be so precious to them, because it's automatic. And slowly, things will cool off a bit. In the brackets. Until Chasron becomes Taverus. If you're used to a spiritual world, you didn't have to struggle for your Yiddishkeit. So it's nothing new. So what happens? It gets a little bit old. So you fall. Okay, so what was the advice? What was he afraid if Jews would have remained? The family of Yaakov would have remained in Canaan. You already begin to see the third generation, the brothers aren't getting along with each other. Already starting to talk Lashon Hara about each other. There's only three generations in. Can you imagine what happened? 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 generations in Eretz Yisrael. So the advice was, they should go into servitude, into exile in Egypt. So that, once they're slaves and they see how disgusting life is in Egypt, they can once again reappreciate the specialness of their Kedusha. V'tizgadol hatshuka, and the yearning can come back. Now in brackets, the Shem Yishul adds a little bit on his own. It's a long bracket. We could say the same thing about the Holocaust for some people. Yiddishkeit was getting stale for Yidden in Europe. And they're getting all excited about all the
enlightenment.
So Hashem said, okay, I'll put you in a concentration camp. You'll see how enlightened it is. And you won't get to put on tefillin. And you won't be able to daven. And you won't be able to have a Pesach Seder. And for some, there'll be a great yearning. I wish I could just have one more chance to put on tefillin. And there could be a great yearning that, you know what, maybe the spiritual world is a lot better. So now he adds himself, Uladidi, and for me, Yeshahosi Bazaar, I'd like to add a little bit to what my father said. Kiyadua Shebederech Shadam Shebederech Shadam Dorachba, then the path that a person moves on, Vaholech, and goes Umatzliach, and he's successful in his service to Hashem. In that same way, he guides his children and those that are accompanying him. If you're excited about the way you go is the way your kids are going to go. If it's boring for you, if you go to davening is so long and so boring and you have to go out to Kiddush clubs, then your kids won't go to Kiddush clubs. If it's so boring you have to talk in shul, they talk in shul. On the other hand, if you're excited about davening and you love going to shul, then your kids get excited. V'alkein Avram Avinu, Avram, shetchilas gidulos of Beis Aviv, what was his original growth in his father's house? V'hayilo menius or divashos, it was lots of things holding him back, lots of things chasing him away from spirituality. A normal human nature is shalachol davar sheisho tshuka, anything you have a yearning for. V'imonimus, and we hold it back. Yesho tshuka yosh, you have even more yearning. Something you want to have and you can't have, you want it even more. Going on to the next column. That's Mahaya Avram Avinu. That was Avram Avinu. Shalaraglam and Enos, because of all the things that were holding him back, were divas and people tormenting him. Shalbevesav that he had in his father's house. God la esat shuka logos beosmer. He had a greater yearning for Hashem. The more you get persecuted, the more you're going to fight for it. You know, imagine you have a hose you want to shoot water out with. But if you bend the hose, it becomes a lot more narrow. It holds the water back. It's building. The pressure builds. The pressure builds. And then when you open up, boom, it explodes. That's the same thing. If something you really want, you can't have it. You want it even more. Okay, and Hoysat, so his advice was, Shekasher tiskarer ma'at hatshuka. If a little bit of that yearning begins to cool off, Eitzel Zarech with his children, Yishtabdu, let them be enslaved begolus in exile. Vamenias v'adifus, and the things that hold them back, and the tormenting, shall go to the exile. Yil lachem l'refua. It'll be for medicine. Tala lahag v'esam ha'tshuka l'as v'yosa. It will raise their yearning that they'll fondly remember what it was to sit at a Pesach Seder. V'zoi osa derech asrav. And that's the way he went himself. He himself had to overcome trials and tribulations, and he felt that's the way my descendants will succeed. So now you understand what it means when Yaakov sent Yosef, which was not necessarily the brightest idea. But Hashem caused that to happen because Me'eme Chevron, from the depths of Chevron, meaning the depths of the understanding of Avraham Avinu, that what's going to be best for the Jewish people in the long run is to be prevented from observing their Yiddishkeit for a certain amount of time so that they'll want it again. Based on these words that we have said, Yuvan Maimar, because you understand the Tochacha, the words of rebuke in Parshas Kisavo, which talks about all the calamities that happened to the Jewish people, it says, why do we suffer? Because you didn't serve Hashem with joy and with a good heart. How can we, just because I'm not happy, I get such a punishment? What's going on? Why do you get such a punishment just because you're not happy? They did the mitzvahs. What a grumpy face. But based on what we said before, human, it's understood, Shagolos ain't above your credit. The Golos isn't primarily a punishment. Rocky 8 says it's a good piece of advice. Meirachak, from afar. Lahagda Lachugavos, to raise the yearning and the enthusiasm. Vakin Gasher Lohav, so they didn't serve Hashem with joy. Vashlohaisa Avodasam, but Chugavos, because they didn't have an excitement about their Yiddishkeit. It was stale. Okay, Boha Golos Achser Achekaviv. Therefore, the Golos comes to return them back to that excitement. Shavim Shabashamayim, Be'ava Rabba, Chuka Tsuma, Brish Ve'esh. That's why Hashem says, if you're not having joy in your Yiddishkeit, you leave me no alternative for that joy to come back. And that joy will come back, but it's going to come in a roundabout way. You're going to be prevented from doing anything. And then you're going to say, oh boy, did I take what I had for granted. Being able to go to a shul and talking to Hashem. It was so uninspiring for me. My whole Yiddishkeit's not inspiring. Being in shul, the only thing that's exciting about shul is the kiddush and the socializing. But talking to God, having a minyan, wasn't too exciting. The faster we could get through shul, the better. So then Hashem says, okay, guess what? You're just not going to go to shul anymore. I'm going to take it away from you. So if you don't have it, maybe you'll appreciate it. Maybe when you're going to come back, you'll treat it a little different. So that's not for us. The next paragraph is for us. If you have friends who are in other cities who can't go to shul, you can tell them that. But this next paragraph is for us. Akol Eila, but all that is in Niskara Dover Eitz Lorim. That's when things cool off for the person. That's when this whole thing kicks into place. And he doesn't have that life in service Hashem. But fortunate is the person. He doesn't need that yearning to be aroused through things that are holding him back and pushing him away. Fortune is the one that while things are good, he appreciates that it's good. And each and every day, he grows and grows. Bavodas and his service, Avodas Hashem Yisparach, B'ter V'Tvila. He grows with learning. He doesn't let it get stale. At Sheba Emes, that truly, b'chol yom v'yom, each and every day, Masi Chadoshos, he comprehends new vibrancy in his Avodas Hashem. V'chaviva he be'ein of Avodas, and his service is precious in his eyes. Called Shah Vishah, every hour Kishar Rishona, like the very first hour. So, it doesn't matter if you're FFB or Baal Tshuva, is that every hour has to be a great hour. Then Hashem doesn't need to do it. V'yadua Maimer HaKadosh, and it was well known the words of the Yid HaKadosh, the Rebbe from Psishcha, Zatzal, he says like this, Shebechol yom v'yom, each and every day. You should be growing every day to the extent who le'umas yom is small. When you're looking at yourself at the vantage point of today, looking at who you were yesterday, the difference should be so great in your eyes, ke'erech yehudi le'nachri, as like the difference between a Jew and a goy. In other words, the kind of Jew you are today, you should have grown so much today that when you look back at how you behaved yesterday, it's so different that yesterday, that's like I was a goy. And today now I'm a Yid. That's how much my Yiddishkeit has grown in the 24-hour period. So the mussar for us is, Baruch Hashem, we're not yet in lockdown. We're not yet quarantined. And if you don't want to get quarantined, show how much you appreciate the fact that you've got a shul to go to. Your children have a school to go to. Maybe instead of complaining so much about the schools and how terrible the schools are, because most parents like to complain about schools. And God says, okay, so they won't have to go to school anymore. We'll see how much better as they sit in your house all day long and make you crazy for 3 weeks. But so for us, it's the last paragraph. For the last paragraph is to think, like, do we appreciate what we have? And maybe to make sure that we go to the places that are conducive to this environment.
And that's enough for your children.
If you go to other places where it's not too exciting, you know, you catch that virus. You catch that virus, so Hashem should help us as we and part of it as the rabbis are saying, you know, you want to make sure that everything works well for you. Take in Shabbos early. That's the school of. Take it in early. Go to Minyan 3 times a day. Don't talk in shul. Hashem should help us that we should not have to need to be taught how precious our Avodas Hashem is. And that will keep us fine.